You have two handouts, I hope, that were in the back of the room when you came in, passed out by our able volunteers, one by Dean, one by me. My handout, which is the one with, I'm getting known, I think, for funky titles in the magazine. I'm the guy who did It Don't Mean a Thing If You Can't Make Him Sing, about him playing, and now I have transposition, a four-letter word. Not a four-letter word, sorry. For some of you, it may be now, but after you leave, I'm hoping it won't be. Right, Dan? We hope both of these things. People will really get to a point where they will feel they have more skills, and some of our hints may help you practice this. So what I've done is I've reproduced my article that was just out in the May issue of the TAO. One of the problems with educational articles, we think, and I know Joyce Cull, our committee chair, and I, others have talked about this, they put these wonderful articles about improvisation and transposition and all this in about 8-point font. And you have to sit there with a microscope. So I thought one of the favors perhaps I could do today was I blew up my article into 14-point type. Maybe this would enable you to actually take it to the organ, throw it up there against your hymn book or your copy of the 371 chorales of Riemann Schneider or whatever, and practice these things. So that is what you have, plus I've attached four musical examples, one, two, three, four, which go with the article. And then following that, I put in the five settings of the Passion Chorale, O Sacred Head Sore Wounded, from the Riemann Schneider, 31 chorales, which of course is a great, 371 chorales, excuse me, which is a great resource for working on these sorts of things. So I'm not gonna touch on the first two pages. I hope if you haven't read it already, those are mainly rationale about why it's a good idea for us to learn this kind of stuff in this day and age. And you know, when people come and say, oh, well, you've got a transposer button, but I hope I've given several rebuttals in the front of the article for that argument, against that argument. So what I'd like to do is go right to the very bottom of page two, where section one is called Note for Note. And this is where I think, as a practice aid, these harmonizations that are all Bach, five of them are all different, and they're all in different keys. So I think what they do is when we're practicing transposition, they keep us a little honest, because in that case, we might have to look at more of the sight-involved things. Things that we're reading off the page, whereas with other ones we might involve our ears more. And what I hope to demonstrate is that you need to combine oral, tactile memory and so forth to make this work for you. Let's take, for example, that number 80 in D major. This is probably the most common harmonization of the Passion Chorale that you'll find in most hymnals. And it's a great example to show what I'm referring to in the article as note for note. In other words, it's in D major, but it's really fairly a piece of cake to go to D flat, isn't it? And number 8, this one. That sounds probably, I would guess, the most familiar harmonization to most of us. So now D flat, it's gonna be a piece of cake, except we've gotta watch what? The accidentals, that's always the thing. I really, one of the things I would suggest over and over again is look ahead for accidentals and find cadences. I stated that in the article in several places, I think. Cadences are wonderful if you know what they are, because if you get off, they give you a guidepost to get back on and then a springboard to get into the next phrase. So we can look at that and say, all right, we've got that A sharp at the end. We're going to put this in D flat and read it note against note. We have to make that A sharp an A in our mind ahead of time. Otherwise, we can simply... That really helps greatly if you're going to go down a half step. Going down a whole step will involve a little more some other things that we can talk about in a minute. Going up a half step, is there anybody in this room who would find great delight in reading this in D sharp major? Doubt it. I would avoid it myself. That's one of those ones, and I say it in the article, you need to make a decision about whether you're going to hear this in D sharp major or E flat major, and then the same is true with other note for note transpositions. Take C major, right? Well, you're gonna go down a half step, C flat, not a bad key. Going up a half step, D, not a bad key. These are the things that you might want to examine all 12 keys as you practice and just say, what are the ones that work best note for note? So here's an obvious example. Now the clef stuff, C clefs, F clefs, G clefs, right? This, and I've been open and honest about this in my article, in that this is probably the least useful method for most of us. Unless, is there anybody here who plays the viola? Okay, you know alto clef, right? Because the viola is, of course, the alto string instrument and uses that clef. Any cellists or trombonists, there's one back there. You do run into tenor clef once in a while with cello and trombone. It helps eliminate 5,000 ledger lines. So there's something that if you do have it, you have a little bit of your arsenal there in the alto clef and the tenor clef to perhaps do a little bit of help. Sometimes one hand or the other will help you out. If you look at the example one, right, you'll see the clefs that we're talking about. This is right after the written part of the article. Just to demonstrate the arsenal of clefs. The G treble, the F bass, we all know those. F baritone, oh my. And then the four C clefs, oh my. Unless perhaps we deal with other instruments, as we've said. Example two shows you, I just decided to make it a C major scale starting with a C clef. Soprano, baritone, mezzo, soprano, bass, alto, treble, and tenor. That's C, D, or those are all Cs. C, 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 all the way up. Do you see? There we are. Example three, right, can be possibly helpful if you analyze this for the combination of clefs you might try. Let's say that you are a trombone player. You can look at that one way down to the left, moving down, perfect fourth, augmented fourth. You've got a tenor clef in the left hand and a baritone clef in the right hand. Okay, it averages up. You've got one easy clef, one hard one, right? And this is true if you look through this whole chart. They're going to be easier and harder combinations to take you off of the familiar middle, which is your treble and bass, right? So this may be helpful. Again, I openly state clefs may not be the thing, unless you've gone to school in France and have learned to solfège in all seven clefs, in which case this should be a piece of cake for you. However, it may be helpful. Let's look at one or two of the easy examples. And these would involve up and down major thirds or minor thirds. Let's take the number 98 in the Bach chorales. Now what would have to happen here? If I bellow at not being near the microphone, can you still hear me okay?
Yes.
I'll take that as a yes, okay. If we look at number 98, it's the other one, this is somewhat familiar. Okay, we'd really have to figure out what we're gonna do with the left hand, right? We're gonna have to use one of those weird clefs there. Probably soprano clef, I believe is the thing. And then in the right hand, however, we can substitute the bass clef for the treble. I should be down there. Should be a natural. Using them in combination like that is, I'm sorry, my mind just got a little hole in it for a minute there.
What key are we going to?